All right, so here's Lee DeCamper, and gosh, we haven't done one of these solo, Lee, in a while, or just you and me, but it used to be you, me, and the big dog for almost 4 years, and gosh, we could sit here and probably tell stories upon stories of what went on between the breaks and before the show and us BSing after the show and then Dumig freaking out saying, I'm going to miss that left turn. If I don't make the left turn onto Gandy by 6:16, I'm going to hit X traffic and all that stuff. It was fun times. It was interesting times. My biggest memories of the show, and I know a lot of readers love the show, and considering how crappy everything else is on sports radio for the most part, I understand that. And yes, I'm taking shots all over town. But Lee, seriously, I think what made it go is that Dumig let us be us. And that's not for everybody, but he really believed that it would be good radio. And I remember sometimes you would ask him once in a while, you'd say, oh, so Steve, how are the ratings doing? How's the show doing? He'd be like, if it wasn't working, you wouldn't be on the air, young man, or something like that.
Well, I do remember they had a sales exec come in. It wasn't just with 620. He was with iHeart. He was a heavy hitter. And he came in one time and he told us the highest ratings they had for an hour every week was the Joe Bucks Fan Hour. Why that came to an end, I still suspicious, but they're lost, not ours. It was fun time. And I do know that when we started up with Steve for the Joe Bucks Fan Hour, you know, I went up to Steve and I said, Steve, I want this to sound like three guys in a bar arguing sports. And I think that worked. I think that's why it resonated. Because it was three guys, like three regular guys at a bar having a couple beers, talking Bucks. And that was my goal, and I think it worked.
Yeah, and unlike most of what you hear on the radio, usually there's at least a production meeting, and they sit around and decide what they're going to talk about and schedule stuff out. We never had a production meeting. Dumig, typically, what I'd walk in, he'd be like, you got juice? Because I got juice. And I'd be like, I got juice, Steve. He'd be like, all right, you better got juice. And then he'd yell at you, put that phone down. And you'd be like, Steve, I'm trying to stay with the latest news. And he'd be like, ah.
Well, you know what? And I'm not trying to compare us to the NFL Network and to a wildly successful show. But Good Morning Football, they don't have production meetings. They just show up and like they throw a couple subjects out and away they go. They pretty much wing it, and it works. And most of these shows, like on ESPN, they're all pretty, I mean, right down to the script. They have scripts. You can't deviate from the script. There was no script with us and Dumig.
Yeah, I never heard about that with Good Morning Football. And I almost, it's hard to believe just because, you know, they start talking about a topic, then all of a sudden you see all the background highlights of a guy. You would think that that's scripted, but maybe they have a team that puts it together on the fly. I don't know.
I'm sure they come up with subjects beforehand, but it's not scripted. It's not like, okay, right, you say this, you say that, for example, that this, and I'm going to call the guy out. You're going to say something that's stupid. You better suck it up. David Carr comes out on the NFL Network. It's not Good Morning Football, and he actually comes out with top 10 Super Bowl quarterbacks. Joe Montana's not on it. I mean, that's beyond absurd. That's a production. You know, they came around like, okay, you say this, like what? That's hot take BS.
Yeah,
and that's just beyond comprehension. You know, I'm not going to get into that, but you know, I think again the reason why it worked with us and Steve, it wasn't scripted.
Yeah, it was never scripted in any way, really, really at all.
Not at all.
Not even in the slightest.
I mean, sometimes we would say, hey, Steve, let's talk about this, but we're talking about 30 seconds before we went on the
right
air.
Right, yeah, that's not scripted. Or no. I might bring this up, and he'd always have his yellow legal pad of stuff to bring to the table.
And his iPad going.
And his iPad, and it was always funny when he'd get a Twitter message or a text from somebody in the media who would piss him off or be like, oh, you can't say that, or those Joe Bucks fan guys, he'd start screaming in the break, this a-hole has the nerve to send me a Twitter message on the air. You know, it
happened all the time.
It really did.
And I'll never forget one time, I even got text messages from a guy in the media room dropping F-bombs on me.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. Well, we're live on the air. And I just, it blew my mind.
Well, it was interesting stepping into that world of Dumig where a lot of people felt they had to listen, and even though they hated him. And that was really the bottom line is that, I mean, the media used to say so much stuff behind his back, and, you know, this guy, and, oh, he's not in the locker room. What does he know? He's a big blowhard. And you and I both knew that his sources were extraordinary.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, here's a great story.
I mean, he'd be getting the texts when we're on the air and be like, oh, it's this guy. It's that guy.
From the Bucks, yeah.
Yeah, or whoever.
Yeah. I mean, he would actually, yeah, executives from the Bucks would be texting him while he's on the air. And I don't think that happened too often with the other guys in the media room that would happen. I will say this, and this was still hilarious. This is a great story. This was in the book that never was published.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately.
Excuse me. And this is what Doomie told me. I wasn't there when this happened, but I'm recounting Steve's story. He used to be a part owner of a bar, a very upscale bar in Clearwater on Olmerton Road called The Venue. And the story, you could just write a book on the stories of that bar and all the sports people that showed up and paid homage to Steve and all the things he heard. For example, Rays players, most of them lived in Tampa. That was on their way home after games. And the stuff that went on, you know, Rays players go there, they have a couple cold ones.
Yeah,
they
party
got
spot.
Loose.
Yeah, night
yeah,
spot.
Yeah, and they would drop stuff on Steve that was just unreal. Anyway, Steve was at his bar one night, the venue again. It was about 11:30 on a Friday night, nondescript Friday night. All of a sudden, his phone starts ringing. He looks at it. Bruce Allen. He's like, whoa, this must be pretty huge. 11:30 on a Friday night, Bruce Allen's calling me? What is this? He picks up. It's Chucky. Chucky drunk dialed him. And Chucky's like, hey, Steve, you with me, man? You with me? And him and Bruce Allen, Chucky and Bruce Allen were out somewhere in South Tampa, partying up, getting hammered, or at least Chucky was already
somewhere,
hammered.
Yeah.
And he decided to drunk dial Doomie. Apparently, Bruce Allen went to, you know, certain things need to be taken care of when you're out drinking, and he was out doing that. And he left his phone on the table, and Chucky's just scrolling through his contacts. And he sees Doomie, and he decides to call Doomie up at 11:30 on a Friday night. You with me, Steve? You with me?
Yeah, there were so many interesting stories. And, you know, Doomie, to his credit, and I think a lot of people don't realize it, you know, he was, you know, he just passed away, 64 years old. He was very ahead of the curve technology-wise. Steve was old. He was all over the internet early. He was a guy always looking for an edge from apps to whatever it was, but early, always way ahead of the curve. For his preparation from Slingbox, which he used to promote and all kinds of things to be ahead for his study, because the guy put in endless amounts of work just to be ready for the shows that he did. And in 2008, he started reading Joe Buck's Fan when we started. And it didn't take Steve very long to realize that, hey, this is where it's at. Like, he liked it and he got it and he understood it. And not a lot of guys his age, from his background, really would understand what Joe Buck's Fan was right out of the gate, but he got it. And I forget if it was you or I who was in touch with Doomie. I don't remember exactly, but he was really a big part of getting us to the station and being a part of the fabric of the station in 2009 when we started to do some online work for their website. We weren't on the air, mm-hmm. but they used to have a website called Buck's Country that was combination a 620 property along with, I think it was 103.5.
Yeah, the country station.
Yeah, and they had a website called Buck's Country that we were providing content for. I had access to the system, and Steve brought us on the air here and there. He was very leery in the beginning of putting us on the air, but he really pushed to get us involved in the station, which he did, and it led to that. And then 2009 came around, Lee, and it was really a classic historic story. And it spoke to Doomig's loyalty because WDAE at the time, different management in place, they applied to the Buccaneers to get us credentials to write for their website, right? So this was the flagship station back then. They weren't on 98 Rock. They were on WDAE. And the boss of DAE asked the Bucks, hey, flagship, we're your partner. We need credentials for Joe Buck's Fan because they're writing for our website. And the Bucks at the time had told us, well, sure, we'll let you into the games, but you need to be affiliated with a major media outlet. We don't do blogs, and this is 2008. So we're like, okay, we'll make that happen. Don't worry about it. Well, sure enough, the Buccaneers applied for credentials for Joe Buck's Fan in, say, August, July 2009, and they get denied. Here we are, just a tiny little blog in 2009. New era. You know, Chucky's gone. Couldn't blame Chucky or anything, right? We got Raheem Morris in there. Well, DAE was pissed, and they were upset with the Bucks, but Dumig was furious. That guy, he went nuts, and he set out to find out why. He started talking to everybody at the Bucks, everybody around town that he could, and, you know, the Bucks officials talked to him, and you know what Dumig concluded? His conclusion was that Buter Report was telling lies about Joe Bucks fan to the Buccaneers and misrepresenting us, and Dumig decided, okay, Buter Report, we're going to pull the plug on you because you're not being loyal to me because we're a family around here, and how dare you do that to somebody I care about? You're out forever from my show. And that's how it went down. That's how loyal he was. And what made that neatly was that it didn't put us on the air. It just, and we didn't ever got credentials, but Dumig wasn't going to let a misdeed, a loyalty deed, go unpunished, and that's the kind of guy he was.
Well, I have another, and it's maybe a better story about Steve's loyalty. And again, it dealt with Raheem Morris. Remember when Raheem went on Dumig's show?
Yep.
And he talked about, this is during the strike. And mind you, the strike, the NFL was pretty clear. Team officials, team executives, team employees were to have zero contact with players.
2011 lockout.
Lockout, okay. Zero contact whatsoever. Well, Raheem goes on Steve's show, and he's talking about how he keeps in contact with Kellen Winslow all the time and a few others. Well, this is on a 50,000. What was Steve's listening audience? How many hundreds of thousands of people?
Well, you know, the ratings varied, but for the Bucks head coach to be on, it was promoted easily 60,000 people.
Easily.
Heard Raheem Morris on Steve's show that day.
And so, you know, we wrote it up. It's like, wow, Raheem's talking to players. Well, Raheem got fined by the NFL as a result. And it cost him six figures. And Steve went bonkers on us. Called us snitches, even though I still can't figure out how you can snitch something that is on a public airwaves that 60,000 people heard about, knew about, how that could be snitching.
Well, this is the all-time classic story, really, with Dumig. Because, so it's 2011, and we weren't on the air with him yet. We once or twice he'd bring me on. I think you were on once or twice. Once was regarding the whole Aqib Talib and the cabbie thing. Because Steve knew that I went to the courthouse and actually pulled the arrest affidavit on Talib, which was never reported in the newspaper was that Talib, when they pulled up, when he was in the cop car, when they pulled up to the jail, he was actually kicking inside the backseat of the cop car. He was going wild, like literally going wild, like kicking and bashing his legs everywhere and trying to kick out. And he was just wasted. And this is all written up. And Steve wanted to know what happened. Turned out because that night started with Talib was at the venue where Steve had the ownership interest. So he was extra interested. Plus it was juice, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Steve had a very close contact with NFL security that we know that. I mean, he dug up a lot of stuff from that because he just knew the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Duma got great information. But
Steve's contacts were vast.
Oh, incredible. So going back to Raheem. So here's the stage, Lee, because I remember Dumig went wild on me on text, and then he called me up and emails, and I actually still have a couple of the emails from him from that day, and he's just freaking out, like, you, how dare you on my show write a, you know, a snitch on the coach, and he's on my, you know, what are you just trying to get clicks? And this and that, and it's my show, and that's my guest, and that's disloyal, and you mother effer, and all this stuff. So I'm like, Steve, take a freaking deep breath. And I was yelling at him. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Steve, the guy said all this on your 50,000-watt station. You got massive ratings. Bucks officials were in the room. Nobody seemed to think it was a problem.
Otherwise, they would have shut it down.
Yeah, I'm like, Steve, you're a smart guy. You didn't even know that what he was saying. He was talking to you. I said, Bucks Media Relations was there. I'm like, Steve, it's on the website for everybody to listen to. Nobody thought this was a problem. So you know what? I waited 24 hours figuring, well, maybe they'll take it down or maybe Raheem will close the show and say, hey, you know, I misspoke earlier, you know, or you would correct him the next day. Nobody seemed to care. So I wrote it up. You know, hey, he's talking to LeGarrette Blount, who's working out in South Tampa, whatever. You know, I mean, you're going to blame me for something on your airwaves? And he's like, you're damn right I am. So Dumig didn't talk to me for at least a year. And in 2013, you know, we still had a relationship with the station, but management changed again, and they basically didn't do what they didn't really hold up their end of the bargain for some of the online stuff. So it just kind of faded away. And in 2013, I had been doing some work for a CBS radio station that folded. Anyway, I'm like, all right. So I approached Dumig, and I said, Steve, I went to it, to his bar, in Clearwater.
Venue.
Different bar.
Oh, was that the Geiger's backdoor bar?
Yeah. So I went up to Steve, and we had set a meeting. I'm like, hey, can we get together and talk? So he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go meet the Godfather at the bar. So we sit down, we're having some vodka, you know, typically Steve's drink of choice. And I said, look, you know, I think we could do some great things together. I said, I'm making a new partnership with the new management at the station. And, you know, I think we should get on the air with you. And I think we could really do some fun stuff bringing Joe Buck's fan to your show. He's like, what do you got in mind? He's looking at me like, what do you got in mind? So I'm like, well, how about Lee and I sit down and do an hour with you every week? And we'll just, you know, but it's got to stay in the theme of Joe Buck's fan, right? We got to keep the same attitude. Got to be us. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at me. He's like, you want to do an infomercial on my show? Is that, I'm like, no, Steve. I think it'll work. And hey, I'm giving it my best shot. So he's talking about what it might be. And I said to him, I'll never forget, I looked at him. I said, Steve, but you have to let me, if I disagree with you, you got to let me sort of call you an idiot, or you don't know what you're talking about. And he looks at me, he starts screaming. He's like, you don't think I know good radio? You don't think I could take it? He's like, these callers, they can't give it back to me. I could take it. What are you talking about? He said, you know, this will work. And I said, well, as long as you let me and Lee just be ourselves, you don't know where that's going to go. And then he was talking some more. He's like, well, when would we start in training camp? I'm like, how about next week? He's like, oh, year round? I'm like, yeah, year round. It's the Bucks. He's like, all right, let's do it. I like it. Let's do it.
Well, just in case, well, I'm going to give a couple examples of the context that Steve had. And just in case people were listening earlier, like, wait, did you say Talib and the cabbie at the venue and Steve's bar? Yeah, that night, that's back when training camp actually had two-a-days. And the Bucks team, you know, and this is throughout the NFL, when training camp ended, it was protocol for
party
every
time.
NFL team, yeah, to go out and party, have a big party, and celebrate no more 2 days. Well, the Bucks did do that, and they decided to go to Steve's bar, the venue in Clearwater. And they were there that night. And, of course, cocktails were served, beers were served, drinks were flowing. Guys got a little inebriated, and Talib was in there. I remember Steve telling me this. He was doing shots of some, like $100 a shot, you know, cognac of some sort. He's doing shots, and he's pretending like he's Greek or something, and he does a shot, and he takes a shot glass. We're not talking gold cups here. We're talking like $10 shot glasses, just line driving them up against the wall, and they're splattering. And, of course, you know, security comes up. Hey, you can't do that. And he goes, oh, it's all right, dog. And he whips out a roll of $100 bills, and he's whipping the $100 bills off like they're $1 bills. It's all right, dog. I got it, dog. And he kept doing it. He kept doing shots and throwing the shot glass up against the wall. It would shatter after the third time, like, you're out of here. So they threw Talib out. Two or three guys went with him. They hailed a cab, and shortly after they left in the cab was the incident.
Yeah, one of the things with Steve that he took a lot of pride in, Dumig, was basically... Oh, no, we're good. Go ahead. Basically, Lee, one of his great sources of pride was all the Buccaneer shows that he used to do for the Buccaneers Radio Network, all those guys that he sort of groomed for media careers. And
they would go to that bar.
Well, no, it wasn't even the bar. It was... you know, he took great pride that Booger, he did a show with Booger McFarland and taught him the ropes and would sit down with these guys. Joey Galloway, Brooks, who was, you know, used to be on Sirius for years. And it went on from there.
Moore.
Moore, he did, I believe he first did the Keyshawn Johnson show before Keyshawn went off on his own. And then, you know, he used to have his own show on DAE. But all those guys went on to tremendous media careers, and he... he counseled them and believed that they could get into the media and spent a lot of time with them on that. But he considered that his legacy in a lot of ways, at least in the media business.
Well, there was also a thing, like I said, Rays players after games would stop at the venue on their way home. It was kind of a hot spot. For a while there, the venue was like the spot to go to, Dumig or no Dumig. It was like if you're 25 years old, you want to go to, you know, try to pick up women or vice versa, you went to the venue. I mean, it was that big of a place. It was a pickup joint. And so Rays players would stop there and see what they could do, you know, see if they got lucky on the way home. But at any rate, they would have a couple drinks and they'd pay homage to Steve. It was like, almost like a scene of The Godfather or Goodfellas, where the head mobster is at this bar and everybody wants to make sure they pat him on the back, say hi, buy him a drink, you know, just a respect. And that's what that was like, very much so. And so Rays players would tell Steve some stuff. There was a couple of bartenders that worked at the venue that dated Rays players. Scott Kazmir's girlfriend.
Yeah, that's the name I was thinking of.
Yeah. Scott Kazmir's girlfriend was one that worked there, and she had like stuff like you wouldn't believe that obviously beat writers for the Rays, they didn't have, but they would tell Steve. And my favorite was, now people may not know this or not, or at least used to be this way, and you and I both covered the Tampa Yankees for the Tampa Tribune. So we got to know a lot of Yankees people, whether it be Yankees coaches, Yankees suits. And outside of Dave, not Dave Cashman, but was it Cashman? I know Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees. His first name?
Brian.
Brian Cashman. Well, Brian Cashman's based in New York. The rest of the Yankees headquarters, the scouting department, the minor league, all the background stuff, they're based in Tampa. Well, a couple of those guys lived in Steve's condo complex. They would walk over to the venue. That was their hangout. And, of course, they had stuff that nobody would have, that, you know, scuttlebutt throughout the Major League Baseball, not just the Yankees or the Rays. And they would tip off Steve. And I was there one night, and one of the pitching coaches was having drinks with Steve. We, just the three of us, were talking for like 2 hours. And so when people that were actually working for newspapers that hated Dumig, oh, he doesn't show up at a clubhouse, doesn't show up, he didn't need to. His Rolodex or his contacts on his cell phone were impressive as hell. If he wanted the information, only thing he had to do was pick up his phone. He didn't have to go when the media or he didn't have to go when team officials said you could talk to these guys for 45 minutes. No.
Oh, yeah. It ran really deep. When I really had one-on-one time with Joel Glazer, first thing he said to me was, I, you know, introduced myself, whatever. First thing he said to me was, oh, I recognize your voice. I'm like, oh, really? He's like, oh, yeah. We never miss you guys on with Steve Dumig. I said, oh, you listen to the whole show? He's like, I listen to you guys.
Well, I do know that there were times when Bucks officials, suits, not coaches, suits, would go to the venue to meet with Steve. Whether they were trying to push an agenda, whether they just wanted to talk to him, you name it. Now, that shows you what kind of power Steve had and influence. They would drive across, you know, like some people, I don't care, I'm from the Midwest, driving doesn't mean anything. But we know the culture in the Tampa Bay area.
Sure.
Driving across the bridge is like driving to freaking Charleston, South Carolina.
Sure.
They would make the trip over here during rush hour to meet with Steve in the late afternoon, early evening at the venue to talk over what they never needed to talk over.
Yeah, I mean, the sources and the information really was incredible. I mean, look, the guy did this show with Josh Freeman for all those years. They were close.
Yes.
They were tight. And, you know, if you're tight with the quarterback, you get a lot of information.
Oh, yeah.
So it was pretty cool, you know, just going back through the years, Steve really, he broke a lot of ground in so many ways on the radio. He was never afraid to take a lot of chances. And I'm not talking about putting us clowns on the air. You know, I mean, look, the guy talked about his DUI on the air in detail.
Yeah.
And how it was going to go to court and how he was going to beat it because he didn't do this and that. Not a lot of people do that. That's not what your attorney recommends you do, you know?
No. The biggest thing I remember about Steve's show, and like I said, he took some chances and he would talk about some issues that 95% of sports talk show hosts wouldn't even think about touching, whether it be racial issues or society issues. He would go there. He had the cojones to go there. But, and you wrote about this, the thing that jumped out to me more than anything, to me, was journalism 101. You know, people always, everybody had an opinion about Pete Rose, whether it should be banned, should not be banned. Did anybody read the Dowd Report? No. No one read the Dowd Report because it was like a sort of a secret file. Well, Dumig got the file. It was a PDF file. He got it from Major League Baseball or wherever. He read the entire Dowd Report on the air. Now, I didn't agree with this conclusion, but I was just beyond impressed, even to this day, 15, 20 years later, he actually read the entire Dowd report on the radio so people can make their, you know, have the facts before them. And I just thought that was brilliant.
And he was the only one who really went so deep on the air and really just, I mean, he had massive files. I remember he showed me his manila file on the Glazers and Man United. And
Red football.
At Red football and the whole linkage. And the guy put in so much time. It was like, you know, we used to work with a guy who was a courts reporter at the Tribune who had these giant files. It was like that he literally put in that much time to find out, you know, what's the linkage, what's this, and
it was like a Terry Schiavo file.
Exactly. He was completely, that's an inside joke, he was completely obsessed with research, mm-hmm. on so many fronts. And like I wrote, Lee, you know, most radio hosts today, they don't watch the games. They'll watch a highlight, they'll watch a little bit, but do they watch every game all the way through?
No.
And
he did.
He really put in that labor on, you know, meaningless Lightning games, and I'd go see him, pop in on him for a drink. I knew the nights that he was allowed out, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And he always had his legal pad with him watching the Rays.
Well, along those lines, I met him one time at that particular bar you're talking about. He walks in, waitress sees him. I mean, he didn't even take four steps inside the door. Waitress saw him. She walks up to his spot. He had his spot at the bar. There were two TVs in front of him. She walks up before he even got situated, before he even sat down. She puts two remotes in front of him. There you go, Steve. And there were two TVs in front of him. One TV was either Rays or Lightning. And the other TV was whatever money he had or whatever game he had action on that night.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up that point, because he would do the two games at once and all that stuff.
And he had his yellow legal pad. He would take notes.
And, you know, really, if you really were an avid listener of his show, it was the knowledge base that drove so much of what he did. Mm-hmm. You know, just that whole college football show that he used to do. I mean,
that was great.
That was a phenomenal show. I didn't even really like it. It wasn't that big on college football, but the guy's depth of knowledge. To do that after a full week of work and Saturday morning, he's bellowing out, you know, college football, every last league, and, oh, you know, money on this Mac game and all that other stuff. And, you know, he put gambling on the radio in a big way in town, which, you know, that he just, whatever he seemed to talk about, he didn't lose ratings for subjects that other people might lose ratings for. I mean, he would even tell people, you know, his favorite thing to scream out on his show, spoiler alert, he would tell people to turn off the air, turn off the radio for a little bit if you didn't want to hear him give a score or whatever and put it back on, which I'm sure drove program directors nuts.
I got a funny story, and this is a throwback for all his fans that listened to him years and years ago, because I'm going to drop a name here. Do you remember Chicago Billy? Chicago Billy is a notorious sports radio caller. And I guess those two guys were friends, but they got into it about something, and Dumig banned him on his show. And the only time Dumig would let him on the air was two times. One, whenever he did his annual tribute to Chris Thomas, he'd let Billy on the air for that. And Dumig used to have a golf show on Saturday mornings. He would let Billy call that show up. And I'll never forget one time, I don't know if it was a very, 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 very late Friday night for me, or it was a very, 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 very early Saturday morning for me, but it was a Saturday morning / late Friday night, and Dumig had a golf show, and Billy calls up screaming something about Tiger Woods. He's associated with the mafia. You know, it was typical Chicago Billy. But Dumig would let him on his golf show, but not his weekday show.
It was funny. You know, Steve, Mike Florio is one of the early guys on Steve's show. Florio used to do a ton of national radio. He used to be interviewed in local markets with Pro Football Talk in its early days. That's how he built his name.
Mm-hmm.
He'd do 30 shows a week.
Yeah.
And Steve had him for an hour. That was one of the few places where Florio would go for a long time or a long stretch. But he even had a beef with Florio and kicked him off the air, and they had a spat.
Florio, yeah.
Yeah, and they had a spat for a while. Then they sort of kissed and made up, and then Florio stopped doing radio. But, you know, Steve wouldn't let anybody show any level of disloyalty. He forgave me, I guess, because I think, I mean, if he were here, I could see him already telling me no, no, no. But I think deep down he understood that the Raheem Morris stuff that we wrote, it would have been a disservice to ignore it.
Yeah.
And it was on his show. It's like, hey, man, you're the one who put it out there. And I ended up going up to Raheem to apologize in Palm Harbor when he was at an event.
this very place where we're broadcasting
we're sitting
from.
And Raheem got all frothy with me in the parking lot, and we were, you know, barking at each other, and he had had a couple of pops, and but he had his driver with him as a sign driver.
We eventually got DUI,
and then Dumig. You know, Dumig's like, and you had the nerve to go talk to Raheem, you. But it was a fun memory. The show itself that we had, Lee, though, I mean, there were just a lot of great memories. We I know the people who listened. Dumig, we were able to make him laugh.
Yeah.
And which I think was a big part of it, because a lot of the guests he's had through the years, Dumig had that trademark laugh, but sometimes he'd laugh at things. It was more of a, I want to say, a corporate style laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be ready to laugh and have a good time, but we'd really make him laugh sometimes. And I'll never forget when he completely lost it and he couldn't recover when he was laughing about a Vegas story you were telling.
Yeah, Vegas story.
And
yeah,
he literally couldn't recover on the edge. Just the laughter. He could not stop. He was trying so hard. He could stop.
That's why he laughed.
And that they let it go. And it was just a,
he'd be, have a big roar that he'd cackle.
Yeah, it was a classic moment. And, you know, we'll talk with Ira on the next Ira podcast about, you know, Ira used to sit down with him. It was Radio Gold every year at the Super Bowl. They would sit and talk Hall of Fame. And I, you know, even
that was great.
Even before I knew Ira too well or at all, really, in a personal way, I was always, when's that going to be on? That's on every year. I got to listen to that.
One of the funniest lines, and it's typical me, one of the funniest lines I heard in that show, it was from Ira. And it was from the Super Bowl Radio Row. And Ira was talking about, you know, if you got to think about if a guy's a Hall of Famer or not, maybe he's not a Hall of Famer. And as Ira's talking about this, he goes, it's like that girl just walked by, Steve. You got to wonder if she's a Hall of Famer or not. Steve, she's a Hall of Famer.
That's a good one. But we, Dumig let us... let us do our thing, and it just worked, and we always appreciated it. But I would never, honestly, I would never let Steve know that that I just wouldn't give him the satisfaction of thinking that he was doing us a favor, you know, because I didn't think the show. I knew that he was, and he understood that from our first meeting, but it could never be a topic. It had to have that barroom feel, like, Dumig, you moron, or whatever, if that was the case. And, it was really unique that he let us do that. I remember, you know, some of the guys, even at DAE, saying, you know, it's just really cool that you guys will, you know, do that, you know. And he would let you go on some wild rants at times.
Well, what was funny was, we talked about this earlier, where Dumig would get direct messages on Twitter from people in the Bucks media room while we're on the air. And there was one time where, you know, they were like, oh, you guys sound like a bunch of clowns. It's horrible radio. Blah, blah. You know, especially the guys that wanted it to be NPR.
Right.
Meanwhile, as I also said earlier, one of the executives said that was the highest rated hour of the week. Out of touch.
Well, he understood. He got it. And, he was a big fan of local media. You know, he didn't hesitate to bring different guys on at different times.
Oh, remember John Cody? He wanted to shoot John Cody at one time or another. John Cody was a reporter with the, at the time, St. Petersburg Times. And I guess Cody wrote some story that really, you know, to what you're saying, it really intrigued Steve. They had him on, and it was like nothing had ever happened in the past. Those two guys were cat and dog, man.
Yeah, it was definitely not afraid to promote people or, you know,
if he thought something was good.
If he thought it was good, he just went with it. If he didn't like it, he'd go with it too. He got a little bit softer later on. He wouldn't call people out in the same way. But, soft for him was tough for
well, still Bruce.
For everybody else. But, it was fun to sit around and we could, you know, the more we think about it, the more stories we could tell.
Sure.
Going beyond and beyond. It was 2003, I want to say. Maybe 2001, I don't remember, but, you know, he was in that syndicate with Chris Thomas, with the horse syndicate.
Yes, and Gail Sarans owned a hoof, and Bob Height owned a tail. And
well, they put together that partnership,
yeah.
And I was the horse racing beat writer at the Tribune, and I started doing that in 2000, and I think it was 01 or 02, so I got, you know, Dumig into gambling and stuff. He knew who I was from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was tasked to write a feature on Superfuse, which was
That's right,
the one Superfuse. Great horse from the Chris Thomas Stables, I think it was even called. And so I had to go talk to Chris Thomas about his horse. And the crazy thing was, is that this was like Chris Thomas's lifelong dream.
Yeah.
This horse was like his baby, mm-hmm. you know, and the horse had made,
even though it was gelded.
And the horse had made them a lot of money because he went off at 33-1 in the first race. And if you own the horse, you bet on your horse to win and see what happens. So 33-1, and it really it got them even more into it. And I remember for that feature, whoever the editor was of the Tribune, they told me, oh, you got to talk to Steve Dooming. You know, he's in the mix. And I'm like, all right. And so he eventually called me back, and he was very skeptical. He's like, what angle are you taking here? What are you doing with him? I don't know why exactly, guys. I didn't know him that well then, uh-huh. but he was very skeptical. But I talked to him, and
he had been birded a couple times in the past by the Fourth Estate, and so he was skeptical whenever someone wanted to interview.
He was very skeptical, but I ended up spending the day with Chris Thomas. Back at the behind the scenes at the track, and met the horse and the whole thing.
Wow!
And so that was an interesting day. But they were very happy with the story, and then from there, I'd be in touch with Dooming on email, mm-hmm. Then it sort of built from there. But
was Superfuse the horse? I remember Dooming chewed out listeners one time because a bunch of listeners went and bet on this horse, knowing nothing about the horse, but they thought it would be cool to bet on Dooming's horse.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
he chewed out the listeners because it screwed up the odds.
Yeah, that went on to happen with some of Jim Rome's horses when he into horse racing. And yeah, I mean the odds are all based on how much money is where the action's going. So. It became a little bit of a problem, but not in that first race when they nailed it at 33-1.
At Calder, right?
Maybe. Okay. I don't know, but good for you if you remember. But fun times, and what the guy pulled off for appointment listening was a rarity in this market and really in any market, like and you had mentioned it for the story we put together. I mean, if you have people driving around on a Sunday night or a Thursday night after a Rays game, and they're thinking in their heads, what's this guy going to say at 3:00? I better be ready. Mark Topkin, I'll close it with this, Lee. Mark Topkin, longtime Rays beat writer, was on the air talking about Dooming the other day, and he said, the Rays used to practice later, or they used to open up the practice facility later, and it was at like 3:15 that was open access, and I didn't want to miss anything, but after certain times, I had to hear what Dooming was going to say, because he would set the narrative of the whole town on a Rays game, and yeah. and as well as for ownership was paying attention. I needed to sort of, if I wanted to put it all together, I needed to know what he said so I knew what they might be reacting to. And he'd be like, I'd sit in my car and then I'd have to run in to not miss anything. But sometimes I'd be like, hey, Dooming, get to the point. What are you going to say? So it's just to have that sort of power in town, and Monday after a Bucks game for years, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
All right, fun stuff. We'll hit some more Dooming stuff, and good times. We appreciate everybody who enjoyed the Joe Bucks Fan Hour, and I've been digging into old episodes, and I'll probably put another one up at some point, especially in the summer when it might be a little fun. Some of the ones from 2015 are out there. So I'll either put them up like I did or dig some out downloadable stuff for everybody to enjoy.